Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new Sprint of Sessions right here on Restoptopia. Happy Monday to you all as we begin a brand new week for our favorite ship, Spencer and Trina, a.k.a. Sprina, on General Hospital. I'm Keela Cash, and by my side, as always, is my co-captain, my right hand, my ride or die, someone who is now entering week three of bereavement, but for not the reasons you think on this show. Back on the sessions, as always, Jasmine. Welcome back, Jasmine.
Hey, Keela. Hey, everyone. Happy Monday to you all. And I cannot believe we are saying that we're on week three of bereavement with the loss of one Spencer Cassadine. But yes, we are on week three, and it's crazy. That's actually really, really crazy. But yeah, still having issues with the way certain things are playing out. But yeah. So I don't know. I still have mixed feelings about everything. Like I'm still, yeah. As Elle called it, the memorial.
The memorial was very meh and mid and lame, and it crashed in the ratings, which wasn't good a couple of weeks ago. So it was not the event of the season, unfortunately, because look how they delivered it. It was anything but the event of the season. And bereavement is for different reasons. It's in terms of the execution of the storyline and how it's not hitting the way it should. We got minimal time for Trina's grief this week, which is definitely a choice. We're going to get into all of that later. And the continued martyrdom of one Esme Prince in death, which is really getting on my nerves. I promise you, if they don't mention her this week, this will be my final time complaining about it. But it's a rightful complaint because they have officially left the gaslight on, and I am tired of it. Chris and Dan, you know what I'm going to say to you. Be gone, bastards. Be gone.
Yes, indeed. Because I'm like you. I feel exactly the same way where I'm like, why are we in week three of bereavement for Spencer Cassadine, but the topic of conversation is criminal bitch Barbie every week? Like when she fell overboard, that should have been the last we heard of her. And yet she, even in death, we can't get rid of her.
She's like the thing that we can't kill. Mm-hmm. Even in death, she still is around and she's getting lionized. She's like a cockroach that won't go away. She's like a flying cockroach, actually, in your fucking face every day in name only. And it continues to get on my fucking nerves. But hopefully, if she's not mentioned this week, we can bury this discussion. But we must talk about it later. But let's not focus so much on the bad stuff. I do want to go back in time in the Disney vault here on the sessions as we remember a beautiful time in Sprina history. This week, on Wednesday, we will commemorate the one-year anniversary of Spencer and Trina's first kiss at the gallery, full circle. Doing that episode for the podcast last year was a treat, and it is still the third most downloaded episode in the show's history. That's how big this was, only behind NYC Lovemaking Week. And of course, when Trina and Spencer almost got it on the Haunted Star last April. So it really speaks to how huge this day was last year for us, and the buildup via SOD, Tabiana's interview, setting the stage for this moment, the fraternity fallout, and how they ended up at the gallery to have this soul-bearing conversation that ended in true love's first kiss, the tippy toes like a Disney princess, the kiss that was so sweet and innocent. And then Tuesday, honey, wasn't so sweet and innocent. It was spicy and hot. Kiss emoji. Spencer, don't stop. Timeline melting down. We had edits, and that kiss was laced with drugs because that was the first thing I saw when I woke up, the last thing I saw when I went to bed for a good month, because that's how hot that kiss was. We kind of talked about it in passing with some retrospective talk last year, Jasmine, but I want your take going back in time this time last year, reliving the kiss that broke Soap Twitter, that trended nationally, by the way.
Oh, when we saw that SOD article, the SOD cover where it said Trina and Spencer kiss, I was overjoyed because we had waited so, so long to get to this moment. And though it took so long to get to it, it was everything that I wanted and more. Like, just the whole thing, like the setting of it being at the gallery where Spencer and Trina first met, because let's face it, that's where they first met, even though Spencer was in his ninja gear, you know, and he got hit upside the face. But yeah, that was their actual first meeting place. But you know, I think every single person remembers where they were and what they were doing on Kiss Day. And it's funny because my big brother was actually here visiting from Georgia, and I remember watching it live, like as it was happening, and sitting on the couch and just being so like enthralled by what was happening on the screen. And then like we have that beautiful monologue from Spencer talking to Trina about, you know, the type of person that she is, which essentially was an indirect love declaration. You know, the first, you know, very, a lot of them, like a lot of love declarations from that guy to, you know, to Trina, like him telling her that he knows who she is, like going back to like all just the callbacks to the person that she is, and you know, all the things that she's been to him for the longest time. Like those moments were so, you know, they were just so beautiful. And then just seeing like the outfits that they were wearing, like, you know, Spencer in his tux looking like the prince he is, and then Trina in her pink soft flowy dress looking like a whole princess, like really, like I mean really, she really did look like a princess. And then just like even like the simple moments of Spencer bringing her the water bottle, because it was a callback to the day that he, you know, that Spencer stood her up when he was Victor. He stood her up on the 4th of July after he said he was going to go grab some water, and he ghosted her. But then he showed up at the park with that bottle of water. It was like that, like those little moments that they added in, like made that kiss moment even more special. But it's like, it's so funny because I was rewatching those scenes again, and I was just like, oh, they look like such cute little babies. And like Spencer, like, you know, the way his face lights up talking to Trina, and you just see like the genuine joy in his face every time he's saying anything to her. Like, it's just so wonderful. And then like having her stand on her tiptoes, like I remember being like, oh my gosh, like this is the sweetest thing, because it's like it's basically because every single one of us is always talking about the height difference. And so, you know, when GH, like I said, when GH gets things right, they get things right. And that was something that they got right by paying attention to that much detail, by utilizing her height in that moment to have her, even though she's in these heels, get up on her tippy toes, you know, to give this kiss. And I still love to this day that she was actually the one to initiate it. And then we had that moment of Spencer being so elated that she kissed him, and then he dives right back in because he's like, oh my gosh, like this is what I've been waiting for forever. Which we go into Tuesday, and what does he tell her? He says, you know how long I wanted this. And, I mean, yeah, Tuesday was something. Like Monday was just like full of like warm fuzzies and butterflies, and oh my gosh, this is the sweetest thing. And then at the end of the episode, and we see what Tuesday was going to bring, and we got Trina talking about Spencer, don't stop. We're like, hold on. Wait a minute. We're going somewhere else on Tuesday. It was like we went from light and fluffy to saucy, spicy, and sexy on Tuesday. But I loved every minute of it. And it was funny because I didn't end up live watching it with Tiffany at the time that the first kiss aired. But I waited all day for her on Tuesday so I could see so I could watch the episode later that night. Cause I was like, I have to watch one of these kisses with her because, you know, we both love Sabrina. So I'm like, I gotta wait for her. And I did. And we were both like, oh my gosh, when we watched that episode on Tuesday. But yeah, like the memories from that are, those will always be very, 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 very fond memories. Like I don't ever get tired of that. And just like, and even the music, like little things like that, like really stand out to me too. Like the music that they use for Spencer and Trina, because I loved that music that they had for them for the kiss, because it just adds something even more to it. But the whole thing was just executed so beautifully, because like I said, when GH gets stuff right, they get it really right.
Yes, the gallery was full circle. The art pieces on the wall were great, very pop art in your face in a good way. A lot of little nuggets, insider information, talking about we are here, we got the kiss, we got the lips, we got a little shout out to Frank with the pop art. I saw all the subliminals. I saw all of that being spelled out for us in a very nice way, which I appreciated. But I go back to the day it happened and I was very happy. And then like maybe half an hour in, I was in spaces listening to everybody's reaction. And I started crying like for like a good half an hour. Aww. Because it was like you waited a year and a half for this couple to finally have their first kiss. And it's happy tears. It's like, finally, it's happened. It's a good feeling. You feel victorious and that it was worth the wait. So I was like a crying mess, happy tears, elated. Like, it finally happened after all of this time. It's not a dream. And on top of that, we had our co-captain in certain places dropping little nuggets and hints about Kiss Day. And then this time last year, he was in spaces with us. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, having that anxious energy of like, oh my God, guys, like you, I'm excited about this kiss because he's been wanting it for so long. And then Tabiana being a little tease on Instagram talking about tea and sipping. Like, she was just doing the most. And I love her because she knew that she laid it down that day. And she said, I'll talk to y'all about it in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, just knowing that they took so much time and care in it because they wanted it to be special for the fans. Like they, because they knew what it meant. They knew what the moment meant to this fan base. And I appreciated that. I appreciated that they actually both like took the time to say like, we want this moment to be perfect for the fan base because they've been waiting for so long for this. And so have we. It's like, it's not just, you know, they're basically like, it's not just us who's been waiting for this. They, the viewers who have been riding with this ship since day one, have been waiting for this moment, and we need to deliver. And they both did.
They did. They were amazing throughout all of this. They are the best co-captains. They know when to lift us up and give us that encouraging bit of news. And that kiss definitely was like, it's about damn time. And when it happened, it activated even fans that weren't really in the know at the time. They were like, oh my God, who are they? This is hot. I want to be a fan. Sure enough, every time monumental moments in Sabrina history happen, you have new fans pop up. And I think that's been a blessing this past year, getting to connect and get to know newer fans that got to know Sabrina through social media, through the edits, through GIFs that people have put out there on the timeline to say this is special and it should not be ignored. And it goes back to why we fight so hard for Sabrina continuously, even though Spencer's presumed dead right now. The journey, the story doesn't stop. The fight continues for the story to be told in full, a fully actually realized love story. And I think we're going to get it without the interlopers, without the agenda bullshit in due time. But just treasure what that day meant this time last year. It was a special day. It will always make me smile. And the build up that weekend, it was worth it. And the fallout, it was a choice to wait another month between kisses. Mm-hmm. But it really speaks to how GH kind of slow rode and slow burned this couple for reasons I would never fully understand. But that is an example of wasted time that could have been given to them over the month of March, and you gave them what, a handful of days at best? Choices.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I can say right now, as of today, this the clip of Tuesday's episode is at 499k views. So we're almost up to 500k views. So is it still popular? I think so.
Very much so. Not so bold prediction. It will cross 500,000 by the anniversary this week, for sure. That clip will be reshared a lot to commemorate a very special day in Sabrina history. So fun to relive it with you guys here on the sessions before we dive into some pretty heavy topics, which begins right now with Monday's General Hospital. So we're at the gallery. It is Trina's safe place from a lot of stuff going on in her life right now, primarily Spencer's presumed death, and she needs time out of the house, and she needs a healthy distraction, and that is how you do in terms of coping. You go somewhere where you can kind of be yourself when you all cried out, and she went to the gallery, and Ava has hired someone else. Would Ava ever, the fairy godmother, will always have a job open for Trina to work at the gallery, and I thought that was just the sweetest thing. Ava is the best. But then we have some interloper bodyguards. We got Dex and we got Frank on patrol to protect Ava. Understandable, but I want our girls to have time to talk things through, which they did eventually. But I do want to talk about the artwork on display. We got a new exhibit. The birds are gone. They flew the coop. They've been sold via auction. Ava made up paper. Good for her. But now we have an exhibit called Embrace. And Embrace is basically all about love, affection, passion, tenderness. We have like hugs and kisses all over the gallery, just pictures of that. And that is the theme. And it's subliminal because every time we're in the gallery, it is a hidden message for Spencer and Trina. Somehow, some way, it all comes full circle. So Trina, in the midst of her grief, is around all of this lovey-dovey stuff. And she grabs a picture and she stares at it for a moment. And she drops the picture and it breaks. And Dex is right there to say, are you okay? And then Trina has a moment. And I have to say that the fandom was very clever in that the one thing that's been missing as of late are good flashbacks. Like the dorm, like the gallery, Spencer and Trina had great moments in these places. Very intimate, important moments. So why wouldn't you incorporate a flashback or three to really trigger that reaction from Trina holding that picture of a man and a woman in an embrace via art? And Trina had her moment when she broke down and she told Ava straight up, I can't stop crying. This feeling's too much to bear. Like everything I hear, everything I see, and she cannot live with this feeling. She doesn't know how to deal with this feeling. And then she says the words that I thought that she would ultimately say, that she wished it was her that died instead of him. And that is very heavy dialogue, but it's very realistic because that's the very definition of survivor's guilt, that you go through a very traumatic experience and you see someone that you love sacrifice himself for you and you wonder why it wasn't me. And Ava says, you stop that right now. I don't want to hear you talk like that, but I can totally understand where you're coming from, because when Kiki died, I didn't want to live either. I felt like I had no purpose here on this earth. But then I realized I have Avery and I have to live for her. And I had to rediscover what it meant to live my life the best way that I could. And she tells Trina that you have to live for your family, live for your mom, live for Curtis, live for Taggart. Yeah, I said it, even though the show won't. Live for people that care about you, because Ava couldn't bear the thought of losing Trina, because Avery and Trina are her girls and she loves them so much. She wouldn't know what to do without them in her life. And they have this hug, and Maura West, her dialogue got to me. And like the way that Tabby folded into Maura in that moment, like it broke me. I was in tears. Beautiful piece of work by both ladies. And then eventually Trina's a bit more calm, apologizes about the picture, and she asks Ava, how long does the pain and the grief last? And she asks, does it ever stop? And Ava says, no, it doesn't stop. It just continues on. It dulls with time, but you just have to learn how to deal with that feeling no matter what. And so we got Dexter providing some drinks, some peppermint chamomile tea to calm Trina down after what she experienced. And then Joss drops by after Dex is escorted out by Frank for reasons that we're not going to get into. And now, you know, he didn't swim with the fishes. Okay. Spoiler alert. He didn't go down in the Hudson River and have a time. So, you know, he just dipped. But overall, we got like about 5 minutes of dialogue for Trina this week on GH to express her grief. It's not the best, I'm not going to lie, but I appreciate the time that we did have. And Ava was right there providing words of comfort and strength during Trina's time of grief and bereavement, which we need to see more on screen. And like I said, the realism of that dialogue of her wanting to die, that is something that people would say when you go through a traumatic experience and you see someone that you love fall to their death, presumably, and you don't know how to deal. That is very realistic. And that is a heavy conversation that needed to be had on GH. But Jasmine, your thoughts on these scenes that played out on GH on Monday?
I loved these scenes because I always love you know, the scenes between Ava and Trina. But when Trina showed up at the gallery, you know, because obviously, like, we know it's her second home and her place of safety and peace. You know, when she said that she was there because she was all cried out and needed a distraction, I sadly thought to myself, if you need a distraction, the gallery might not be the best place because there's a lot of memories of Spencer in there. But then I also thought, to be fair, Spencer is literally everywhere now for Trina. The gallery, her dorm, her parents' house. He's even imprinted on her mind, body, and soul. Like, he's everywhere. Like, Spencer is literally everywhere on Trina. Everywhere. But, you know, when she was preparing to hang that art piece with, you know, and she stared at it and thought about Spencer, I thought the same thing. I was like, this is yet again a missed opportunity for GH to throw in a flashback. Because, you know, when that music started playing while she was walking with the portrait and it was like it sounded very ominous. I was like, oh no. Like, as soon as I heard the music, I was like, oh no, she's probably gonna have a flashback right now. But then she stares at the painting and, you know, I had to rewind it back to really look at the painting to see what it was that she was seeing, because I couldn't tell what the figures were. So when I looked at it, I was like, okay, it looks like it's like a couple, I guess, like under an umbrella, and they're like embracing. Like, that's what I thought when I was looking at it. And so then I was like, okay, she's obviously upset, you know, affected by this, because, you know, it's a couple in an embrace, and goodness gracious, there's embraces all over the wall. Like, the entire art gallery is full of people, you know, being embraced. So that's, you know, that's sad to see. But I think a lot of us were like, are you serious, GH? Like, this is, you know, the month that Spencer and Trina shared their very first kiss in the art gallery, and you couldn't use common sense, imagination, anything to say this would be a great place to put in a flashback of Spencer and Trina's first kiss. Like I said, wasted opportunity, just a totally wasted opportunity. But also, I also have to point out too, because it was mentioned about the fact that I don't know how art galleries work. Honestly, I do not know. But, you know, General Hospital has continued to have the same artist for every single exhibit that Ava has had when it comes to, like, Spencer and Trina, I guess you could say, because the pop art exhibit was done by Brent Houteling. I think that's how you say his name. And A Little Bird Told Me was also done by Brent. And now Embrace is done by Brent. So I don't know if maybe, like, Ava just has this, that this is just the artist that she loves to use all the time, and this is the one that is constantly wanting to, you know, and then Brent, you know, that Brent loves to showcase his artwork at her gallery, and they have some kind of, you know, some kind of arrangement. But I'm like, unless that's the case, GH is not very imaginative with creating new artists. Like, I mean, if you're gonna continue to slap an artist's name on an exhibit, maybe throw in some new ones for a change. Because, like I said, unless they are continuing to make this one particular artist that has a contract with Ava and they just constantly showcase their art, okay, fine, whatever. But if it's meant for us to be looking at this and thinking that we're seeing a different artist, it's not working. And it was funny because I actually went back and I looked at previous clips. Like, I looked at, like, old clips from, like, the gallery scenes, and I was like, back in the day, I don't recall really seeing any names of artists slapped up here until, like, fairly recently. So that's why I'm like, now you know, GH, we're paying attention to the names of the artists on the wall. So something to keep in mind, just a thought. But anyway, you know, when Trina freaks out about breaking the painting, and Ava said crisis finished, I was like, ugh. Like, the when Tatiana said, but it's not finished, and she had that moment where she, like, put her hands in her hair and sat down, like, I felt that. Like, that actually had me in tears. Like, the moment that Tatiana did that, I was like, ugh, this is painful. This is really painful to watch, because that, you know, that loss of Spencer hits her like a ton of bricks in that moment, because, I mean, she's reminded basically of all the times that she and Spencer have spent there. And I thought it was done, like, I thought Tatiana did that, like, beautifully. I thought it was done very well, because it was a great way for her to showcase that moment that we've all talked about, like, in our own lives. Because, like I said before, like, I, you know, anybody, any of us that have lost anybody in our life, like, you could just be going about your day as any, just as if it's a normal day, and then all of a sudden you're just slammed with grief and you start crying and you don't really know why. And it was like that moment like triggered her with seeing that painting, and that was when she just lost it. And I thought it was a good moment too between her and Ava, when she was talking about basically her survivor's guilt and saying that she wished that she had died instead of Spencer. But Ava, you know, Ava does what she does best, and she brings her back and, you know, tells her like, don't say things like that. And like, I just love how Ava talks to Trina and is constantly like, you're like a daughter to me. Like, I love that. Like, that always puts me in my feels when I watch the two of them talk to each other. And like, Trina's just like, she's just really struggling. Like, she's really, really, really going through it. But, you know, Ava does her, you know, thing where she talks to her about Kiki, and she's saying that she understands the pain that Trina's experiencing. But, you know, honestly, I also have to say that I found it kind of sad too, that Chris and Dan have written for Ava to be the only person that Trina can lean on, which isn't to say that I don't appreciate a good, you know, Treva scene. But every single one of the women in Spencer's life should be someone that Trina can go to too. Like, Laura and Alexis are the perfect example of women that should be, you know, people who are helping Trina through this, because those are the two women that Spencer was closest to. So like, Trina should be having lunch check-ins with them. But unfortunately, Chris and Dan, you bastards, and I say Frank too, decided to have Laura and Alexis love on Esme as if she's the one that Spencer's dating. And that's like, that's a problem for me. And even when you think about it, even in Ava's dialogue, when Trina's talking to her and she's asking if this, you know, when she says, is this feeling of grief and sadness ever going to go away? Ava tells her, Portia, Curtis, Marshall, Stella, and herself will help her get through it. Not Taggart, by the way, and definitely not Laura or Alexis. So it's basically like, it's one of those things where it's like they've also siloed Trina's grief and who is a support system for her in all of this. Because like I said before, like if Chris and Dan and, you know, whoever else was involved had given more attention to detail when it came to the relationships that Trina could have been building with the, you know, the women that are important in Spencer's life, then we could have seen that. Like, we could have seen her and those women building relationships too. And unfortunately, there are none. Like, there's no relationship between her and any of them. And that's unfortunate. Like, that really is unfortunate to me. But if Ava's gonna be there for Trina, then I'm all for it, because like I said before, like I love watching the Ava and Trina scenes because they're always very, very meaningful. And I also, it was interesting because when I was listening to Trina, you know, talking about like how she wished that she was the one who had died instead of Spencer, I actually had this moment where I thought, goodness gracious, I was like, oh my gosh. I was like thinking about like the, you know, the shoe on the other foot kind of thing. I was like, Trina saying that she wishes that she was gone and not Spencer. And then I was like, ugh. But like, if Trina was gone, Spencer would be a wreck too. None of these situations are good. Like, neither one of these scenarios are good ones at all. Unless Trina's basically saying, like, I wish I died with Spencer, but even still, neither one of these are good scenarios. But I thought the scenes were really, really good. Short though they were, I loved it because, you know, like I said, Mara West and Taviana, they have such great chemistry together. Like, I believe their relationship with each other, and it's always nice to watch on screen. But, you know, Dex bringing them the tea, that was sweet. That was a sweet little moment because, you know, he was trying to be, you know, a gentleman and a friend. So I did appreciate that. But yeah, I still do wish that Trina had, you know, more people in her corner too that she could go to right now.
Absolutely. Shout out to Le Cordon Dex. He can fix tea, he can cook a mean chicken piccata, and he can grill the hell out of some grilled cheese. So good for him. Congrats. Boots to you. So I want to unpack what you talked about Trina's grief being siloed to just Ava, and how you said that she can definitely talk to Laura and Alexis about her grief regarding Spencer's death. But let's take it a step further, Jasmine. Mm-hmm. These two women are complicit in mm-hmm. some ways, because Laura basically bended the justice system for Esme to go free. Mm-hmm. And then Alexis gave criminal bitch Barbie a work release program job. So when you have those two combined together, let Trina be angry at these two women. Let her yeah. unload on them. Let her have her moment to say, you know what? A lot of this is your fault. A lot of this you put into motion. A lot of this was you being gullible and you letting your guard down and you letting some of this happen, which is why Spencer is gone today. And if Chris and Dan and Chris had two working brain cells, they can rub together and create something really special. Think about this. Another woman Trina can talk to is Sam. If you're bringing back Jason Morgan, who is up until maybe until the next couple of weeks presumed dead, have Trina talk to Sam about Jason mm-hmm. and how Sam dealt with that loss. And guess what? You are actually dropping some anvils about what we will see on screen imminently. And by doing that, you open the door for Trina to maybe believe that, hey, if Jason Morgan can defy death not once but twice, then maybe Spencer survived as well. It opens that door and it gives Trina renewed hope. But that would require Chris and Dan to think, and we know they can't do that, so fuck them.
And you brought up some good points too by what you said about Trina and like letting her be mad at Alexis and Laura, because I mean, even just with Esme going to both Laura and Alexis and telling them that she had feelings for Spencer, and what did they do? They validated that. Like Laura told her, oh, it's normal for you to feel this way about Spencer. That's natural. And Alexis was like, oh, what's really going on, Esme? Why do you want your own place? Because I have feelings for Spencer. Oh, okay. But they never told Spencer. And even Trina told Spencer, hey, I think Esme wants you back. And he was like, no, Trina, she doesn't. But that's because his grandmother and his aunt failed him. They failed to communicate this to him, to tell him, hey, just so you know, like, she actually wants to move out too because she's got feelings for you. And then he could go ding, ding, ding. Oh, you know what? My girlfriend, Trina, was right. Esme does have feelings for me. So this is not a good situation for me to be involved in. But like I said, that goes back again to what we complained about last week about how Chris and Dan just decided to completely erase Esme's obsession with Spencer and just make it all about her kid. Like that's what they did. Like they tried to make it all about the baby when we all knew for months on end, like from what we watched over the summer, that Spencer was what she really wanted at the end of the day. I mean, we saw it when she went to the house to go pick Ace up, when she said, then stay here, when she told Spencer, when she's like, you've already made your choice. And he's like, you're right, I did. And she's talking about him going to Paris. But when she gets on the boat, it's all, I'm here to save my baby. I'm here to find out where my kid is. Like, come on.
It's just disgusting. And Trina has every right to be mad at these women who have done her wrong, and Spencer as well. And that is how you channel grief as well, via rightful anger that is properly placed in their direction. And that is the kind of writing we want for Trina that could give her, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes of airtime a week instead of 5 for one day, which is not enough. Of course it's not enough. 5 minutes of airtime to grieve the love of her life, that's egregious. That's totally unfair and unbalanced. And I hope that in the weeks to come, it gets better. But, you know, the show, they have their agendas and we kind of see where things are going. And I'm already bracing myself. But speaking of agendas, I want to address something that Ava did not say that she could have had an opportunity to say not once, but twice. So she mentioned Trina's support system. She mentioned Portia, Curtis, and no one else. Mm-hmm. Marcus Taggart was missing from the equation. And when Ava once again reiterated that Trina has her, Portia, Curtis, Aunt Stella, and had Daddy Marshall, Marcus Taggart's name was omitted again. Mm-hmm. After months of this man being MIA, last seen at formerly known as Kelly's, had a flask in hand, poured it in a cup, and he was sipping. Presumably, he was getting drunk. That was the last time we saw Taggart on our screens. Last July, over 6 months, he has not been seen or heard from since. Trina last spoke about her father during Thanksgiving, saying that she has two fathers. Since that time, Marcus Taggart has not been acknowledged during the actual Thanksgiving dinner at the Robinson Ashfords. Christmas time, Marcus Taggart was missing. The Bon Voyage party, he was nowhere to be found. When Trina came back home after Paris, he was not there, wasn't even a part of the rescue team. He has been flash thingied a la Men in Black for us for reasons I do not understand. We have been neuralized. We have been flashed, and they said Marcus Taggart does not exist. And I'm here to tell you that is a lie. Marcus Taggart exists. For 20 plus years, he raised Trina as his daughter, regardless of DNA. And that was what was said to us last spring. Regardless of the test results, that is going to be her father then, now, and forever. And we got a grand total of one scene since that DNA test reveal. And that's when it was at Kelly's last summer after Curtis got shot, and Trina was guilt-ridden as to what she should do, how she should split time between her two dads. And since that time, Taggart has slowly been erased from Trina's life. I don't know what the agenda is behind the scene, but that is classic gaslighting one-on-one, and that's not the only time they've done that to this fan base this week. But this has gone on too long and too far now. I've seen on other soaps, on Days and YNR, when it comes to two dads, they're both acknowledged. Their roles have their place in their kids' life as youngsters and adults and thereafter. Point blank, period. What is the issue here for Taggart not to be acknowledged? Like last summer, he was supposed to be the interim police commissioner, and that was reconned for reasons I don't understand. And now the job is Anna Devane's, who I love, by the way. But Marcus Taggart locking up Curtis for RICO violations still would have been the juicier storyline, but they completely backed down from that because this show has a tendency not to go there in terms of drama. That would have been good for Trina to be torn between her two dads, but they don't want to go there. And now we don't even want to acknowledge Taggart's existence. Like, Taggart is her father. That is never going to change, no matter how hard you try to erase him from history. That's not going to happen. Yes, she has another family. That's lovely. But Taggart is her family too. And it is time for them to stop saying that he doesn't exist. To hear Ava omit this man's name not once but twice was glaring. It was a slap in the face to Rial. It was a slap in the face to the character of Marcus Taggart and to us as fans who have seen this story play out. You've given Trina a family in the last 4 years, a mom and two dads. Don't erase Taggart from that timeline or from her history. This time last year, he was there for his daughter when she found out, guess what? My mom's lied to me all of my life about my paternity. He was there for her this time last year. Don't flash thingy us. Don't insult our intelligence. And I hope when Patrick comes in, he remembers that Trina has two dads, her bio dad and the man that raised her.
It's actually interesting, too, that they didn't have Ava say anything about Taggart when she was talking to Trina because, you know, think about it. When Trina was going through all of the stuff with her parents, she went to the gallery. She went to the art gallery and she talked to Ava. She had a full conversation about what should I do? Like, what should I do, Ava? Should I take the DNA test? Should I find out? Like, she made it very clear to everybody around her that Taggart was always going to be her dad no matter what. Like, she said that all the time. But with the dialogue that they keep on putting in, like, you would think otherwise. And I think it's really sad because, like, I don't care what anyone says, because until my final look at Taggart is not him getting drunk at Kelly's/Bobby's, I'm not going to shut up about him not being on my screen. Because if he isn't on my screen, mention him somewhere in the script. It's not that hard. A simple write-in or Trina, you know, for Trina or anyone to say something about him is perfectly fine. And also, like, the fact that, like, it still bothers me that we still never got a scene between Portia and Taggart after the DNA results were revealed, because that's just absolutely ridiculous. Because like I said before, we had Curtis have his moment, you know, a couple times with Portia about the 20-year lie, but Taggart doesn't get that moment. Like, I don't see how that makes any sense. And if anybody wants to try to say this whole thing of, well, you know, they don't need to have two dads in Trina's life. I'm sorry, but you can look at Sonny and Jax when Jax was on the screen, and you know, with Joss, we saw the balance of both of those guys in Joss's life. So don't tell me that we can't have two fathers on screen to a young girl. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me we can't do it, because it can happen. It can be done. And just like you said, Kilo, there were so many opportunities for better storylines that they could have done for Taggart and Curtis, you know, all around, because, you know, this is the problem with Chris and Dan and whoever else is coming up with whatever we're going to see on our screen, because I don't just think it's just Chris and Dan doing it. I think it could also be Frank who's making the decisions for what's happening with the storylines and like where storylines are going to go, because We all just knew, like, the viewers of General Hospital are not dumb. Like, we are not stupid. Like, we have intelligent minds where we can watch a show and we can watch an episode of General Hospital and come up with something in our heads and go, oh, this is going to be a good story. Case in point, when Taggart had his moment talking to Jordan about the job, like when he was talking to her and she was saying that she needed somebody to be the police commissioner because she was taking over the role of deputy mayor, he came there and was like, I'm looking for a job. And she offers him this role. And guess what? There's no follow-up after that. Like, why did they even write for Taggart to go to Jordan's office and have this conversation if they were not going to have him take the job of the police commissioner? That could have been a fantastic story. Lots and lots of drama for Curtis and Taggart and Trina and Portia. That could have been some great TV, because with Curtis doing the stuff with Miss Wu, washing her money behind the scenes at his club, they could have done a whole storyline of Taggart trying to figure that out instead of having Mac do it, because they basically had Mac be like, oh yeah, Curtis has got this stuff going on. They just said it in passing, like it wasn't a big deal. Like GH creates storylines and they just throw them away like they don't matter, like they don't mean anything. Like, they create what we think are going to be big storylines, and then it just goes and dies off in a whimper, and we go, okay, so I guess that's done. Like, I guess the money laundering for Miss Wu is over and done with. And yeah, and also because Sonny says so, like Sonny tells Miss Wu to leave Curtis alone, everything is over and done with, so we don't have this anymore. Like, there's no drama. And I also find that to be like really frustrating, because it makes me think, and I, like, you know, everybody says it all the time. Like I said, people keep saying, why do you want to bring race into this? Why do you want to, you know, do that? And it makes me think, like, they don't want to write good, meaty stories for the Black characters. I said what I said, because that would have taken away from whatever we're seeing right now with like Sonny and his drama with, you know, the pikemen that didn't pikemen, whatever was happening with that nonsense. They could have focused all of their energy onto Curtis, Taggart, Trina, Portia, and Miss Wu, all of that. Because like I said, once Miss Wu lost her access to the Savoy, I said it on this show, what happens to Miss Wu now? That's what I said. When they were like, we're not going to be having your poker game in our club anymore, then I was like, oh, well, there goes Miss Wu's storyline. So it's basically like, the diverse characters on this show all lost their story at the same time. Cause it could have been that could have been a really, really great story. Like, it really could have. But again, safe writing choices, lazy writing choices. And now we have what we have, where Taggart is just basically gone and not even thought of at all in any way, shape, or form, which is, you know, which is really, really frustrating, because like we saw him around during the Greenland stuff, but we don't see him around for his daughter when she loses the love of her life. Like, he was literally one of the people that was like talking to Portia about how close Spencer and Trina were going to be after Greenland. But when Spencer's gone, Taggart's nowhere around to be a support system. I mean, really, like, it's crazy. Cause like I said before, like, Like, and I will keep saying it until that's not our last look at Taggart. I'm going to keep talking about him. And I don't care what anybody says. I really don't, because we're talking about, like, people keep on saying, like, just let it go. Like, they're building this family with Curtis, which, okay, fine. They can do that. They can build a family dynamic for Curtis with, you know, with Trina and whatnot. They've been doing that. But that doesn't mean they have to push Taggart up, you know, to the back and say, this man doesn't exist. Like, it's mind-boggling the choices that they've made for this character all around and for Trina with these 2 men in her life.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Hopefully this is something that the new writing regime will address in the weeks to come to ensure that we have Trina's dads on screen, Curtis and Taggart, in her life, helping her with her grief. And it's not going to be so one-sided, with Curtis being the one lending his support and Taggart is nowhere to be found. I'm very tired of GH playing these games with us. And it was very egregious and apparent what they tried to do on Monday, which is basically erase Taggart's part in Trina's upbringing, which was definitely a choice and not a good one. As we get to our next topic at hand, which is Laura and Kevin becoming parents in their AARP years to Lil Ace. And they question whether or not they were ready to take on the responsibility of raising a baby. But you were ready to hand that responsibility over to Spencer as if he could handle it at the tender age of 22. But now you guys say, I have jobs. We have careers. We're busy. Can we handle the responsibility of raising a baby? And they eventually relented and said, yes, we can. We can raise this baby. So Kateka Fried Martin showed up and he said that, hey, I got the paperwork drawn up for you to legally adopt Ace. Nicholas has signed off on it from prison, as he is not doing his time, I don't think, but I guess he's awaiting sentencing, I suppose, for kidnapping Esme for the greater good, in my humble opinion. But I digress. So we had Kateka Fried Martin come through with his 11 herbs and spices and the paperwork.
Not the herbs and spices. Yeah.
All secret ingredients to this day. Maybe a little rosemary, a little thyme, a little cayenne, I don't know, some lemon pepper, some soap seasoning, I don't know. But he came through with the herbs and spices and the paperwork to see if they are willing to adopt baby Ace, and they agree to do so. And good for them. This is something they should have did a year ago, as we begged and pleaded for them to do. And now, since Spencer's gone, according to Laura, they must take on the responsibility of being parents to this baby. And the fact they were debating, oh, whether or not we should take care of the kid, little Ace is probably wondering, oh, you don't want me? Just send me away to a little orphanage somewhere and just have me out here twisting in the wind. So thankfully, they made the right decision to raise the baby in their senior years, which I appreciate. But like we said before, you could have did this a year ago and spared us all. But I guess it's never too late to do the right thing, Jasmine.
So annoying, these scenes, honestly. When Martin came over there talking about Nicholas and all that stuff, it was just frustrating, because I'm like you, this is something that they could have done a long time ago. They could have adopted Ace a long, long time ago. And not only that, but realistically, with Nicholas being behind bars, I didn't pay that much attention to what Martin was saying to Laura and Kevin about any of this, but all I thought to myself was, Nicholas is still the father, so why do they have to adopt the baby? Did he give up his parental rights and say, here, mom, take my kid? Like, I'm not understanding it. But, you know, Laura's hesitation actually shocked me, because I was like, wait, Granny, I thought you absolutely adored the little one. And Kevin's hesitation didn't surprise me in the slightest, because first and foremost, that man has not held that baby once since he's been born. Not once has that baby been in Uncle Kevin's arms. Not once. But all of a sudden, Kevin is Mr. Casual with his casual clothing he got on, his leisure wear, no suits, talking about, I'm taking care of the baby, let's raise him together. But, you know, like I said, him mulling over the decision is because all he was doing was thinking about Ace's gene pool and what type of kid he's going to grow up to be someday. Because like I said before on X, I said he was thinking about the fact that that this kid is the spawn of his criminal niece, and he is the grandchild of not one, but two murderers, and he's got Cassadine blood in him too, which, you know, believes in world domination and all these other things. So that makes for quite the child and the teenager when he does become a teenager, because first of all, Ace is 1 year, 1 year old, but them terrible twos, Kem's gonna be in for with the terrible twos. But yeah, no, I was bugged. I'm just gonna be realistic. I was bugged by this, because the thing is, Esme was still Ace's mom when she was in Spring Ridge, and she took that kid to prison with her, for goodness sake. So all of a sudden now it's like, oh, Spencer, like, I don't know what they were thinking writing for Laura to even say that, for her to basically be like, well, with Spencer being gone, it only makes sense. Like, when she said that, I was like, hi, newsflash, grandmother, Spencer is not the father. Like, why are you talking about him like he was the father to Ace, and he died, and now Ace's father is gone? Like, that bothered me. And so, yeah, congrats to you, Kevin and Laura, for doing the right thing that you should have done a long time ago.
They want a cookie. I don't have one to give to them, honestly. You don't get credit for doing what you should have did over a year ago. And Kevin up here doing business casual Monday, like, oh, I want to hold the kid now. I want to be a responsible great uncle to my possible serial killer nephew in the next 20 years. You're right, Jasmine. This kid has no hope for a good future. Despite the love he's going to be given by Laura and Kevin, that kid is thinking, my mom's a crazy bitch, my granddad is a psycho, my grandmother is in prison, she's no better, and I have Cassadine blood allegedly running through my veins. I am meant to cause mass chaos and destruction, and therefore, Jasmine, I am changing Ace's name
to what?
To the following: Damien Stewie Ace Cassadine.
I mean, they're already, my mom doesn't think so, but they're already, in my mind, I feel like depending on where they decide to go with this kid, with Ace, and like, you know, whether or not he still is a Cassadine, but even if he's not, like, they could be setting up for all the, you know, sometime down the road for a vengeance story for Ace, where he's like, where he's basically wants to go after people because he feels like all these people did all this wrong to his mother. And I could see him wanting to go after Spencer, being, even despite the fact that Spencer raised him for like the better part of his, you know, his first year of life. But I could see him being like, my mother was abandoned and people were mean to her, and the whole town of Port Charles is this, that, and the other. And then he, like, he goes on his own little vengeance tour, like his grandfather Ryan. It's already there.
I mean, it's only fair, is it not? I mean, the template for murder is right there in plain sight. I mean, he has three people to look up to for advice, from hell and from prison. So he can definitely carve his own path of murderous destruction in the next 20 or so years. But one more thing. As you said, Jasmine, we have Laura basically saying if Spencer was not presumed dead, he would shoulder all of the responsibility of raising this damn baby. Mm-hmm. And somewhere on the English Channel, we got Spencer doing the backstroke saying, nope, I am not doing that when I get back home. You are out of your fucking mind. You raise this kid. I've done my time. Now it's your turn.
Please. Please. And thank you.
Immediately. Every week I would give Spencer a new swim technique. This week is the backstroke. Next week would be the butterfly.
Okay.
So we're going to try to just keep this as entertaining as possible as we hope that he swims his way home to Trina sometime very soon with Dove in hand, as we get to Tuesday's General Hospital. Now, normally I love myself a good Elizabeth and Laura conversation, but I was not feeling this at all. She was a little bit too happy about Laura and Kevin raising this damn baby. Like, oh, that is wonderful news. Oh, I would love to drop by and babysit this little demon ass kid one day. It would be my pleasure. I'll get Aiden over here. Jake, we'll have a time raising this badass kid supposedly down the road. And then she was scared to testify against Nicholas, but Laura said he pled guilty and he's awaiting sentencing at Pentonville, knowing the show that they'll forget about that and he'll just go to prison. Fuck this show. So Elizabeth props up Laura and Kevin being good parents for a change, and she eventually leaves. And then we have Ava show up and they have a conversation. Now, let me tell you something. This is when I thought, the agenda is in. I saw the breakdown writer that day, Suzanne Flynn. I saw you do what you did, and I didn't appreciate it because you basically had Ava trying to say, oh, do you really want to see me after what happened in the courtroom a few weeks ago when I tried to throw Esme in jail? Rightfully so, Ava. And then Laura says, oh, you don't have to make any excuses to come see or talk to me. It's all good. And it's all water under the bridge, even though you got the ball rolling on Esme causing all kinds of mayhem in Paris. But I digress. But then they sit down and they talk about how Laura's doing since losing Spencer. And she talks about taking care of Ace. And then Ava rightfully says that Ryan took Kiki from me and Esme took Spencer from you. And then these two ladies, who I love, Ava more so than Laura these days. I don't love Laura. I love Laura when she was not a pot person, not so much now. But I have a great deal of respect for Jeannie Francis and Maura West as actresses, two queens of their craft. But the material they were given was pure shit, as they basically blamed Ryan Chamberlain for why Esme turned out to be the criminal bitch Barbie that she was in life. And now they're trying to paint her as a victim in death, saying he groomed her, he manipulated her, he basically told her what to do and weaponized her for his own bidding. And they was like, thank God he's gone and we don't have to worry about him anymore. But poor Esme, lost soul, little lost pilgrim girl that had no chance at life because she was corrupted by Ryan Chamberlain. Well, let me tell you something, show. Chris and Dan and Chris, you hacks that don't have a job today. Every episode of GH we will see until your names disappear is another example as to why your asses got pink slipped. So let me get this straight. Esme sought out her father despite Maggie's wishes not to do so because she knew Ryan was insane and a murderer, a serial killer. But Esme said, ooh, I want to meet him. He sounds interesting. Mind you, you two alluded to the fact that maybe, just maybe, Esme murked her adopted parents. But y'all dropped that little nugget over the fall and winter. So it runs in the family that she's a serial killer, supposedly. And she went to her daddy and they plotted against Spencer's family to get back at Nicholas and Ava so crazy Ryan can get next to Ava to fulfill his own fatal attraction. This was all done willfully by Esme as she was sent to Europe by Ryan to do his bidding because it was their plan from the jump. From drugging and framing Trina for the sex tape of Jocelyn Cam, those were her choices. Those were her choices, not Ryan's. In fact, he told her not to do that. It was child's play. It was amateur hour. Leave those kids alone. She refused to listen. Heather told her the same thing as well. Leave those twerps alone. And Esme said, no, I'm going to do what I want to do. So let me be perfectly clear. Esme is no victim. She willfully wanted to do bad things to people, and no one told her what to do. She did it all on her own. It was a plan concocted by the both of them, and she went along with it because she wanted to. Yes, Ryan grabbed her wrist a couple of times, and he got a little threatening, but the fact is, she still did everything she wanted to do because she wanted to do it. And the fact these writers trying to gaslight us into saying in the afterlife that Esme would have had a chance at a better normal life if she stayed away from her daddy, that is a lie. When she knew the man's resume, knew the man's track record, and his history of being, I don't know what, a psychotic serial killer, and still said, I want to meet him anyway. He sounds like a swell guy. Fuck off, GH. Fuck you. Fuck you, Chris and Dan, for trying to sell me this pile of shit. And Suzanne Flynn, fuck you too for writing that outline. And fuck whoever wrote the dialogue on Tuesday too, because all of it sucked.
Yeah, it really did, because I'm not here for the Esme was a victim stuff, because this is the thing, like, General Hospital, like, they'll start off like on a good note with like the dialogue that they're giving some of these characters, and then it just is like, wait a minute, we're back to this Esme propping stuff again, like, we're really doing this. Because, you know, Laura and Elizabeth, when they had their conversation and they were talking about everything with Nicholas and all the stuff he did, I was just listening to it, and I'm just like, okay, whatever, because Laura was talking about, oh, your life isn't going to be upended by what happened at Windermere and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, like I said before, like, there's just so, these characters that are coming out of the woodworks, like, they're like, you know, like, having Liz show up at Laura's place all of a sudden after Ace gets adopted was just like, it was just random. Like, it really was. Because, like I said, now Ace has, like, all the support in the world now that his mother is dead. Like, all these people just want to show up and, you know, Liz over here bringing diapers over and talking about how she's worried about everything because she, you know, with Nicholas and having to testify against him and this, that, and the other. But, you know, just, like, watching their scenes. And then when Ava stopped by, I was like, oh, this is nice. Like, you know, when Ava stopped by, because we had her talking about Trina's grief and everything that she's going through, which was nice to see. Like, that was really nice to see, like, her actually being the one who constantly reminds Laura and everybody else, like, hey, Trina's going through a lot of stuff right now. And, like, finally, like, he's like, somebody's doing it. Somebody is continuing to tell Laura about this. But then, like you said, they went into the stuff talking about Esme and her being a victim of Ryan's and talking about how he played a big part in making Esme evil, which is irritating to me, because I'm like, they keep pushing aside the fact that Esme was adopted. Esme had adoptive parents before she found Ryan. I don't know when she found him. I'm not exactly sure. Like, I don't know, like, you know, if it was like right at the time before she went to the, you know, before, you know, the boarding school meeting Spencer or whatnot. That's unclear, because we don't really know a lot about her or her, you know, or her adoptive parents, by the way. But this whole thing of, you know, Ryan made her do everything. I mean, that goes back as far as the day that Trina showed up at Spring Ridge to talk to Esme, and they threw in that line for Trina to talk about, you know, about being drugged by her. She said, well, how do you know my dad didn't make me do that? Like, they did that right then and there. With that moment when they had Esme basically say, well, I didn't, you know, how do you know my dad didn't tell me to drug you? Which we all, as the people who have been watching this storyline play out, you know, for the longest time, we all knew that Ryan didn't tell her to do that. Ryan, as you said, told her, leave those kids alone. Like, he said it was a childish, you know, a childish vendetta that Esme had, and he told her to leave Spencer and Trina alone. And what did Esme do? Esme decided to go out on her own because she was petty. Like, that's what she did. Like, she chose to go off on her own and do whatever she wanted to. And like you said, she relished in everything that Ryan did. Like, she enjoyed it. Like, she sought him out. She was warned by Maggie to stay away from him, like, and that he was a bad person, but she was curious about it and was like, I want to go meet this man. And then what happens? She meets him and she starts concocting this plan to bring down, you know, to bring down Spencer and Nicholas and Ava. But like I said, we don't know exactly the moment that she met Ryan, because they have this whole thing where she had adoptive parents. So it's like, was she talking to Ryan at the same time that she had her adoptive parents with her in her life? I really don't know. But ultimately, I'm tired of General Hospital trying to paint her as a victim. Like, I am. Like, I really, really do hope that this week we're not going to hear anything about her. I'm done. Like, when they had her funeral and they buried her and Heather showed up and all that, then that was their time to have their moment, whatever. But I don't want to hear about her anymore. Because last week, just having to hear, basically Ava have sympathy for her yet again, because that's what they did. Like it was the same thing as when she stopped by the art gallery and they had Ava be soft with Esme. They had her feeling some type of pity for her, and I didn't like that. Esme did what she did. Like, she's the reason for what happened to her. She got on that boat in Paris and did what she did, and that's why she's dead. So she made those choices all on her own. So this whole thing of she was a victim, no, I'm not buying it. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it.
I hit my ceiling last week during the memorial for that bitch on the other side of the gravesite during Spencer's memorial. And then they had the audacity to have Laura and Ava talk about Esme again and then blame Ryan for everything that she did. And I should not be capping and defending a fucking serial killer. I shouldn't be doing that. I should not be saying, you know what? Ryan Chamberlain didn't do that one thing. And he didn't. He didn't do anything in this instance when it came to Esme, because Esme willingly did this stuff and then some. So I am so sick of having to defend Ryan for something he didn't do. And I should not be saying a serial killer is in the right. That should never be in my vocabulary, but it is. And I blame this show for being stupid. And even in death, they have an agenda to lionize Esme, to say she was a victim when she was not. And I need them to stop. I hope this week, as you said, we do not hear those four letters on this show. I don't want to hear the name. I don't want to see it in any way, shape, form, or fashion. I want to forget this chick exists. I just want it to be done, because the fact that you keep talking about her as if she didn't live the life she deserved, give me a break. I'm not buying it. If you're upset you had to write her out, boo fucking who. She was a waste of a character that was outliving her space on this show by at least a year. And you tried to redeem her via amnesia, and that did not work. You tried the Summer from Hell bullshit with a supposed triangle that we could smell a mile away, and we said hell no to that. So no, every attempt you're making in life and death to make this woman better, it is not going to work. Give up. It's a lost cause. She will never be good in life or death, especially in hell where she is burning.
Especially when you write for her to be showing up at Pentonville talking about how once she got her memories back, she realized why she felt like what she did to Trina was justified, was because it was justified. But then they want us to feel like she's some victim in death. Please. Please.
And going out the way that she came in, trying to drug somebody on her way out the door. Oh, let me get the syringe and have some drugs ready for Trina so I can drug her again. So you're tone deaf 2 years later, but Esme's a victim. Fuck y'all. That's why you are now collecting unemployment for the next 90 days. Not my fault. It's yours for being incompetent writers, and I will keep coming for you every chance I get, because you suck. And anyone that is on this show still co-signing another agenda, you're no good either. I said what I said.
I agree. I feel the same way. Because did people even talk about Peter this much after he was killed off? Because I don't even recall people talking about Peter this much.
No. Even Anna said he deserved it in the end.
Okay.
That she was there crying. It's like, oh, I didn't want to leave the body. I mean, she did. I mean, she had her moments, but she didn't.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, she didn't like feel guilty about it for weeks at a time. She's like, motherfucker did what he did. Bye. oops, my bad. You lived a rough life, but you bought this on yourself, essentially. Mm-hmm. But she didn't carry that burden.
And that's what people need to realize about Esme. They need to bring, like, start speaking the truth of the matter, which is she brought this on herself. And they won't do that. She brought this on her own self.
Yes. Hopefully, with new writers, Patrick, God willing, you could course correct and say that Esme is a murderous bitch and that she had no redeeming qualities and she felt justified in what she did. Tell that story. Stop gaslighting us old writers, but take a deep breath and let it go as we transition to what is supposed to be the day of love on General Hospital. Can't you feel the love in the air, Jasmine?
Nope. Absolutely not.
You can't see Cupid shooting his arrow and landing little heart bows to Portia and Curtis as they celebrated Valentine's Day, and got to shout out good old Suzanne Flynn again, because during Valentine's Day, the most romantic day of the year, and what should be a very trying day for Trina, but apparently Hat Daddy said, "Hey, Trina, in your time of grief, let's go out to some art thingy event so I can take your mind off of Spencer for a few hours as you let your mom and Curtis have the house all to themselves." I said absolute fucking bullshit to that.
There was no Elton John, "Can You Feel the Love Tonight" playing, no Marvin Gaye, "Let's Get It On." None of that stuff was happening for me on this day of love. Absolutely not. And Hat Daddy taking Trina away for some art retrospective thing, it actually annoyed me, because I was just kind of like, okay, I get it. They're doing this whole thing where they're trying to say, like, oh, Trina's trying, you know, Marshall's trying to, like, help her get her mind off of Spencer. But I'm like, I'm sorry. If it was me and the love of my life was gone and it's the anniversary of the first time we kissed each other, I'm going to be upstairs in my bedroom, curled up in the fetal position, crying my eyes out. And then just the fact that they even have that moment off screen. I said, they even have Trina being a people pleaser off screen, because she's stuffing her grief down to make Marshall happy. And you know she only said yes because she didn't want to hurt his feelings. And she probably didn't want to ruin her mom and dad's anniversary. And so her staying home, basically in her mind, would be like, I'm ruining mom and dad's day. Like, I'm ruining their day of love. So that's why she went. But yeah. Like, congrats to you, Marshall, for playing matchmaker.
Nah, I'm surprised to leave a special pot of love gumbo soup on the stove just for them to ring in their anniversary. So they're eating and they're celebrating their anniversary. And then we end up in the bedroom where all the magic didn't happen for a year. And just for the record, for months, Portia was living across the hall because Curtis said, I need to be by myself because I can't be the man you want me to be in my condition. Now, granted, he said his dick was not broken. It was not paralyzed, but he just had performance issues in terms of his confidence and the psychological roadblock in his head. But today, he said, you know what? It's Valentine's Day. It's our wedding anniversary. And baby, you can finally unwrap my dick after a year. Are you happy now? Here, Gina, damn. Here's my dick in a box. Feel free to open it right now and you get to do as you wish. And so Portia climbed on top. Yes, she did. I wished I could say she had a time. I don't think she did. She tried. But Curtis gave her absolutely nothing as he was oiled up in baby oil and shea butter. And he just sat there, gave a few kisses here and there that were absolutely passionless and emotionless. And then Portia said, I got something for you, honey. I got a trick just for you. I'm going to take off my robe. And I am going to toss it seductively on your wheelchair. As if she ate that, when she did not, actually. So the fact that the camera person cut right to that moment was some of the shadiest shit I've ever seen. How sexy is that? How romantic is that to see a robe just thrown on a wheelchair? Curtis's primary mode of transportation. So we get to Portia grinding on Curtis. And granted, we know that Curtis can't exactly thrust up, but you know what he could have done, Jasmine?
What?
He could have palmed the ass cheeks. He could have guided his way in the ocean, but he opted not to. He was literally stiff as a board.
Yeah.
Surfboard, it was not. It was not that. Portia could barely get the motion going in her ocean, and she just tried her best to climax. And I just felt completely numb to all of this. And my only conclusion was, Trina did not learn how to ride from her mom. That was not hereditary. Maybe she learned how to ride from the spirit of Irene, maybe. I don't know. Maybe Irene taught her some things in her dreams that, girl, let me tell you how to swivel your hips for Spencer. And sure enough, she did it in NYC. She did. Now, if Irene is not Curtis's biological mother, the Aunt Stella deserves full credit for how Trina is writing here in this situation. It's in the family line. Maybe it's on Portia's side, maybe her grandmother, somebody in the Robinson line was a rider. It wasn't Portia. Now, maybe it was who she was riding on that could not deliver what she was trying to give out. If that's the case, she needs some other day. Because this dick was not serving what it needed to give in this moment. And then after Portia got the dick after a year of begging and pleading, we skipped a few segments, rightfully so. I needed to decompress because I felt nothing. In fact, I played some clips from Sprina in Paris and got my life and said, this is how you do it. So eventually they came back and they said, oh, was it worth the wait? Fuck no, it wasn't worth a goddamn wait. A jackrabbit did more than you did, Curtis. I mean, in your case, maybe you need to stick to the fleshlight. That's more your speed. But they was in the afterglow, basking in it, saying, this was just what we needed. We've been through so much this year. Trina's pain, who cares about that? What matters is that we made love in our bedroom for the first time in a year. And it was completely mediocre, but I'm trying to say that it... Portia tried, y'all. She tried to sell it. I didn't believe her for one second as they cuddled and they were the last couple we saw for the day. And this was a day of mediocre sex across the board. Mm-hmm. We had chasing Brooklyn doing nothing. The space heater said, I don't want to work today either. I can't even generate heat for y'all asses. Freeze. Then we had Michael and Willow, people we don't care about on this show. Underwhelming. So once again, on sex day, even in death, Sprina was spared. Because who would want to be a part of this shit? But I digress, Jasmine. Your thoughts on Portia finally getting her cookies tossed.
I don't have very many because the scene was very underwhelming. Like it was. And I say that that's because there was no build up to the moment. Because, I mean, we heard from Portia when she talked to Liz that she and Curtis were sharing a bed again. But in all honesty, we needed to see that because in my eyes, Portia and Curtis were doing nothing to rebuild their intimacy. And a sushi date night does not a fixed marriage make. Like when they went out for the little sushi date, you know, all the couple months back when Cyrus first got out and they were worried about Trina, that does nothing for me. But I feel like with Curtis and Portia, if they were gonna have them have this love scene that was supposed to be so good because, you know, the viewers hadn't seen it and the Portia and Curtis fans out there were waiting for them to consummate their marriage because they didn't consummate it because of the, you know, all the paternity stuff coming out and whatnot. But like I said, Portia and Curtis, like we watched them do a lot of arguing for months on end after, you know, after all the stuff, like after the truth came out and then, you know, she found out that he kissed Jordan and, you know, this, that, and the other. And then he got shot and then they started trying to like have like Portia and Curtis like find their way back to each other in some way, And then, like you said, we found out that it wasn't a matter of him not being able to actually be physically intimate with her. It was just a mind thing, but he sent her away the night that she came to the guest room, which, by the way, they did not have sex in their bedroom. As far as we know, that was the guest room that they were in. Because unless their guest room looks exactly like their regular bedroom, that was the guest bedroom. But like I said, we didn't see the buildup to them having intimacy again. Like, it would have been nice to have seen, like, you know, a moment where they're talking to each other and she maybe she's in the room and she's gonna go to her own room or whatever. And then he says, no, stay. And they just like lay in the bed and cuddle. And you can't tell me that it's not possible for General Hospital to create a moment of cuddling between a couple when the FICOR writers did it just fine for Dante and Sam. Like, I can't tell you how many times we saw Sam and Dante in the bed just cuddled up with each other, having intimate moments. So why not do that for Portia and Curtis, union writers? Hi, Chris and Dan. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, why can't you reestablish intimacy for Portia and Curtis so that when they actually did make love, it actually felt like something to the viewers? Like, we actually felt that they were making their way back to each other. Because for me, I didn't feel like they were making their way back to each other at all. Like, I don't feel like anything was resolved. I feel like it was just like, here, let's just throw a love scene in for Portia and Curtis because this happens to be the anniversary of when they got married. Like, this is their wedding anniversary. Let's finally let them consummate the marriage that they didn't get to consummate, you know, on their actual wedding day. Like, it did nothing for me at all. And in the afterglow, when Curtis said, yo, I've wanted to do that for a long time, I said, you sure didn't act like it. Like, Portia's been trying to get it from us, and you are not acting like you wanted to give it to her, not at all. And then when he asked her if it was worth the wait, I was just like, really? Like, you're actually asking her that? Like, come on. But like you said, no, it was not worth the wait at all, because like I said, the intimacy was not reestablished for me. Like, I felt nothing when I watched that scene, and that's not how I'm supposed to feel. Like, as a viewer, I should have felt, oh, like, this was nicely done. And then, like, even like you said, with the moment of them having her throw the robe and it lands on the wheelchair, I'm not trying to say anything, you know, obviously, you know, that is hurtful or anything like that against anybody that has, you know, is in a wheelchair or anything like that. Cause I don't want it to come off like that's what I'm saying. But like, what was the reason? Like, who were they doing that for? Like, who was GH doing that for? Like, why did they think did they think that was sexy to show the robe land on the chair? I don't understand their logic behind doing that, you know, making that decision. Like, the robe could have still gone to the floor, like, or it could have just been tossed on the side of the bed. Like, I don't know who they did that for. I'm not sure why they felt they needed to do that. But like I said, the intimacy wasn't there for me. And then, you know, the couples that you mentioned that we did, the other couples we mentioned, you know, that you mentioned that we saw, you know, Chase Flynn and Milo, I didn't care. I didn't care. I did not care at all. Like, when I was watching their love scenes, I was just like, happy Valentine's Day, ? Like, that's how I felt watching it. Like, it was not love. It was not love in the afternoon at all. Like, it just wasn't. Like, even, like, just every single one of these love scenes, they could have kept them. They could have kept every single one.
It was like a love anthology from hell with mm-hmm. all of these couples having sex. And then the one couple that has chemistry, Sante, didn't get a full-blown love scene. Like, right? I know they would have served because Dom and Kelly have chemistry, but we got a scoop over the sofa and that was it.
And that's why, Keela, that's why they didn't put Sam and Dante in there, because they knew they would have ate everybody else up.
Sure would have. Would have put everybody to shame. And damn it, I needed something. I needed a win on Valentine's Day. Did not get that with any of these love scenes whatsoever. I was like, where is Mac and Felicia? Because they gave in October of 2022. Do you hear me? They delivered. They answered the motherfucking call. These couples failed miserably. I was underwhelmed. So therefore, I'm very thankful that I have Lemon's YouTube channel. And if I want to see quality lovemaking, I have NYC, I got Perry, I got Marathon Sex for Thanksgiving, and I got New Year's Eve with Sabrina. I'll take that over whatever the fuck this was supposed to be for the day of love.
Ugh. Yuck. Love in the afternoon. Epic fail.
Lies. Lies. Let me throw dead roses on this episode. I can't. I'm offended. Disgusted. As we move on to now, Friday's General Hospital. Now, I did not expect to talk about Father Sai Sai, but he was a highlight on Friday. So as Laura and Kevin are getting used to the parent life of raising baby Ace, I have to say that Kevin is actually being a responsible parent, because when that baby monitor goes off, Kevin goes to running all of a sudden. He didn't do that for a solid year, but now he's Captain Save a Baby. Let me go out there and see what's going on with little Ace. He's crying his little eyes out. He's crying his little heart out. Let's see what's going on. So he leaves, and then Uncle Sai Sai shows up. And he lets his sister know that I am here for you during your time of need. And Laura tells Cyrus that she is adopting Ace to be the legal guardian of the baby alongside Kevin. And Cyrus is very happy about that. And he thinks it opens the door for him to be a part of Ace's life. And Laura says, no, that doesn't mean that. I will allow you to see the baby on my time and my wishes. And Cyrus concedes to that. And then Cyrus lets Laura know that since Nicholas is in Pentonville, he's offering his protection from the inside. And Laura says, I don't want your protection. I'm like, Laura, now, despite Cyrus's many, many faults, why are you turning down protection for your son, who is a prince, by the way, a very rich man who's in prison, who needs all the protection he can get, whether it's bribed by law enforcement or, in the case of Cyrus, he has a flock in Pentonville. He has men who have been rehabbed by him by reading the good book, by getting the word during Wednesday Bible study. And he says these men will protect Nicholas on the inside. And then Laura says, aren't they criminals? Well, Laura, it is a prison. What do you expect? They are criminals who can be reformed. And even Cyrus says, listen, Laura, let it be known. I didn't, you know, align myself with some bitch ass lambs. Okay. I got me, and not even sheep, Laura. I got me some strong rams. Okay. On the inside. They got my great nephew's back. Okay. I ain't got no bitch ass lamb chops on my team. I got some strong men that's going to handle business. And I hope that Laura takes that advice that, yeah, your son needs some help on the inside while he's locked up for a crime, honestly, he did for the greater good. But I'm going to leave that alone. So Cyrus lets his sister know that he is going to be delivering the word across all of Port Charles via a brand new radio program. And several of my mutuals look to me for my immediate thoughts on this, because Cyrus is trying to get into my line of work. And all I got to say is, bitch, I did it first. Leave me alone. This is my territory. This is the Sabrina Sessions. You can have the Jesus Sessions way over there, okay? This is my shit alongside Jasmine. Leave us alone, okay? But I appreciate the inside jokes to get my take on Cyrus having a fucking radio show on the AM dial on what? KZPC, I think.
I forgot what it is.
I don't know what the station dial was, but I know it was PC at the end of it. And so Laura is horrified at the thought that Cyrus has been given a platform to spread his message. Now, listen, Laura, I understand that you are leery of your brother, and I understand why you would feel that way, because he put you through so much. But you were so forgiving of Esme that you gave her chance after chance because she's a mother. Oh, my God. But Cyrus, granted, he's no good, but you are giving him the stink eye every chance you got. Here's my thing. If you can give the stink eye to him, why you couldn't do the same for Esme? But I'll leave that alone. Just selective anger and judgment, even from someone that deserves it. And I feel sorry for Cyrus because, dude, considering what you did, you deserve a little slack as well, because Esme got it. in life and in death, apparently. So Cyrus says, I gotta be spreading the word in about 15 minutes. Tune in, sis, to hear what I got to say. So he leaves. Now he said 15 minutes. I said, where is this radio station at? Across the street. I mean, this is a quick turnaround. You got to get set up. You got to test the audio. You got to make sure the commercials are timed out just right. I'll be on there in 15 minutes. I said, this is a pre-tape segment? I don't know. So anyway, Laura tunes to the radio station, calls up Jordan and say, I need to tune into this shit. Because you got Laura, you got Dante, you got Anna, you got Jordan, you got them listening in to the brand new show that's going to be touching hearts across Port Charles. Presenting, not the Jesus Sessions, okay, that's a clever name. Cyrus debuts on KZPC. I'm making up the acronyms now, I don't care. Somewhere in Port Charles is a radio station with a FM dial or AM dial, whatever the signal he chooses. But we bring to you now Searching with Cyrus. Searching what exactly? Your soul, what you're going through in life, the pain you're enduring. He's here to help you figure it out one day at a time. And he's spreading this message. And Kevin's like, what the hell is this? And Laura says, I have to listen to every word to find out what hidden messages he's spreading to the fine citizens of Port Charles as Father Sai spreads his words of faith across town. All I have to say is, I want more of this. I need a podcast breakdown of Searching with Cyrus every single week. I actually need GH to be creative and drop 5-minute Bible stories of Cyrus delivering the word online. I need that in my life. I lived, I laughed, I cried laughing at this. But Cyrus, I'm here to let you know, don't ever, ever step on my toes again. You sanctimonious son of a bitch. But Jasmine, you're taking Father Sai trying to encroach on our territory, you selfish bastard.
Okay. First of all, I gotta talk about Cyrus talking to Laura about doing everything he can to protect Nicholas. It goes back to what I said last week. Did I not say that I was worried already that we were not gonna see Laura in any courthouse on behalf of Nicholas to cap for him like she did for Esme? Like I said it. I said because of that spoiler with Cyrus stopping by to say he's gonna be taking care of Nicholas. I was like, well, there goes that. We're not going to be seeing Laura stand up for her son. And sure enough, we didn't. And the fact that they actually had her be so irritated by the fact that Cyrus is doing stuff to protect him on the inside, that was very odd to me. I'm like, so you don't want your son to be protected while he's behind bars in a maximum security prison when your brother has connections to people who could actually keep him safe? Okay, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense to me. Okay, whatever, Laura. But yeah, no, Cyrus having a radio station was not on my bingo card in 2024. I have no idea what GH is doing. I don't know what the end goal is with this. I don't know who decided that a radio station for Brother Sai would be the way to go. I'm guessing that it must have been somebody who's tuning into the Spring of Sessions and thought, hey, we should do something like that and have Cyrus talk about all the goings on in Port Charles. So I don't know exactly what Cyrus's message is going to be when he gets on the radio waves. You know, I don't know if his show is going to be on every week or if it's going to be on daily, but I find myself wondering how GH plans on, you know, playing this out. Like, is it going to be Cyrus narrating? Like, is he going to be all of a sudden narrating General Hospital episodes? Like, is he going to be narrating the beginning of an episode, the end of an episode with the closing moments? Like, you know, moments that are closing out. Like, what is the purpose of this? Like, that's basically where I'm at with this. I'm like, what is the purpose? What is the goal for this? Like, where? Like, what is he going to be saying? And if he's calling it searching for sire, I mean, if he's calling it searching or whatever it is, as long as he starts giving us clues that he knows where Spencer Cassadine is, I'm all for it. Like, drop some clues that you know where Spencer is. I feel like GH, when, you know, depending on how they play this out, they're going to have a lot of subliminal messages in there from whatever he says whenever he hits the radio. But like I said, I don't know what the goal is. Like, I just... What is it, GH? Like, what? Why are you doing this?
To troll us, Jasmine. To troll us. I appreciate the parody. It is a sincere form of flattery. I can see it a mile away. I'm kidding. I'm joking. But I am for searching with Cyrus because I think that he has Spencer. I think that he's going to drop some hints as to his whereabouts, saying that, you know what, if you just find the strength, if you find a shore somewhere, you'll find your way home. You will. Spencer walked on water to find his way home. That's what Cyrus is going to say. I cannot wait for the subliminals he's going to drop in the weeks to come. But I'm all for Cyrus having a gig at the radio station, dropping the word 3 times a week to the people of Port Charles and dropping clues as to his true mission in life. We shall see how it goes, but I am all for it. It was a highlight for me on Friday. That's good comedy versus the not so great comedy we got. That was completely unintentional, but I'm going to leave that alone as we now get to Sabrina speculations for the week ahead, the things we can expect on GH this week. And it is a Trina Day today on President's Yay. Day. Yes, it is. We celebrate a holiday that doesn't mean a whole lot, but hey, we'll take it. It's a Trina Day, damn it. And on this Trina Day, we must take pause and reflect on what could be a day of choices for us as we dive into it right now. So on today's GH, Curtis comforts Trina.
I mean, based on the preview, like the way what he said to her in the preview, I feel like it's going to be him telling her that she doesn't have to hide her, you know, her feelings of grief over Spencer in front of him. Like when he says, that's not how it works around here for me or something like that. That's how I interpreted it. Cause I know some people were kind of like, what is he going to be saying to her? Like, I know some people were kind of like frustrated, but I feel like that's what he's going to be saying. Like, it's going to be like, I feel like Trina's going to be trying to put on a brave face. And he's going to tell her she doesn't have to do that. Like, he's going to be like, if you, you know, you're allowed to feel sad and, you know, don't be afraid to show your emotions. Like, I know Spencer meant a lot to you or something like that. But as far as like the whole episode being centered on that, I don't have hopes that these scenes are going to be long. But I feel like these scenes are going to be super short. And yeah. I mean, the whole episode is just going to be her talking to Curtis?
Probably. In her silo. In the house. With her dad. And at her other dad that raised her. But I digress. Definite choices. Also on Monday's GH, Stella helps Marshall get answers. Probably about his schizophrenia misdiagnosis.
Okay. Because I was literally like, I literally read that and I said, to what? Because it looked like they're at GH. So I thought this, I read that spoiler and I said, answers to what? Like, what else does he need to know?
Probably the why, which is fair. Why this happened all those years ago, because he basically went ghost based on a misdiagnosis on his family for 30 plus years. But now he demands answers and Stella's right there to help him. So good for them. As we get to Tuesday's General Hospital, Jordan is surprised.
I don't know. I got nothing because Jordan hasn't really been doing much. So
no,
I don't know.
So we'll see. We'll see. Then Portia is rocked by Curtis's admission.
That's an interesting one. Like, that is one that has me like, like what kind of admission could it be? Like, I like, cause they just got done making love for the first time since they've been married. And you know, obviously, like, we know that he's still dealing with his stuff from, you know, his surgery. So I'm like, is it going to be something in regards to the surgery? Is it going to be something in regards to to the therapy? Like, is he going to tell her that he's starting to feel like he's going to be able to be able to walk? Like, what kind of, or is it going to be something that he, is it going to be something that has to do with Trina and Spencer? Like, I don't know. I don't know what it could be, but watch it. It will probably be more than likely, it'll probably be something about him and his procedure.
Yes. Or better yet, he can make an admission. The sex sucked.
Oh no.
Honesty in marriage is important.
Like, I don't think I did very good.
No, I think I underdelivered. I undersold. Oopsie. My bad. Let's try again. Portia says, no, actually, I'm good. I'm good for right now. I don't need to ride you again. Try that experience. Highly overrated.
She's like, I got Bob. She's like, I got Bob upstairs.
Oh my God, you did not just name her Jackrabbit, Bob. Bob the Jackrabbit.
Battery operated boyfriend.
Battery. You are a mess with this acronym. Battery operated boyfriend. No.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Oh my God, I can't with you. I'm still calling him Bob the Jackrabbit. I do not care. It means the same thing, that you got to put the batteries, preferably double A, in the Jackrabbit and have a time. Okay? Make sure it's a nice curve and it hits every erogenous zone, because Curtis couldn't do it himself with his very average performance during Valentine's Day. As we get to Wednesday's GH, which could be the day that raises my blood pressure, depending how it goes, Trina encourages Jocelyn.
I already said that I'm trying not to think like negatively about this scene and how it's going to play out. But for those of you who just watch, you know, Sabrina scenes, Trina scenes, Spencer scenes, Dex left town. Okay, Dex is in. Dex got sent off by Sonny to like some safe house. He's in a safe house, basically. Like, let's just keep it 100. Let's keep it a buck. He's in a safe house, and Jocelyn is upset because Sonny sent her boyfriend away. So she's, you know, very sad about this. Even though her boyfriend is alive and well, breathing, Sonny told her as much. Like he said, your man is alive. But the concern is, I'm saying it now, the concern is that the grief that Trina is feeling is going to get pushed down, and it's going to be pushed down because she's going to be doing the job of saying, it's okay, bestie, your man loves you and he'll come back for you. It's just totally fine. Meanwhile, her friend is saying, and I know it's not the same thing because, you know, Spencer is dead and, you know, presumed dead, obviously, you know, he's dead, but, you know, Dex is alive, blah, blah, blah. But then Trina will say, oh no, it's okay because you love him just like I love Spencer. So that's my concern. My concern is that they're gonna push Trina's grief down to the bottom so that she can be the uplifting best friend.
That is my fear as well, because now we have to minimize Trina's grief to amplify Joss's, and I'm already feel irritated before the episode is even aired. And I know that I could smell bullshit a mile away, because Trina is the one that needs the comfort, and she needs the encouragement and the support of her best friend. And the fact that GH has decided to do dual grief storylines at the same time, 2 weeks apart, is deliberate. And the agenda is very clear and real, and I am not here for it. But like I said before, it's not surprising. Look who's fired. And every day is a reminder as to why they do not have jobs today. Here is Exhibit H. We will get to Z by the time their names fall off the credits. Trust and believe that. But yes, I'm already dreading these scenes. I'm not looking forward to them. I am glad it's a Trina day. But ironically enough, for my girl diversity, it is on GH Negro Wednesday without fail. And it happens to be the 1 year anniversary of the kiss.
Yes. Of Kiss Day 2. We'll see how it plays out, everybody. Prepare yourselves.
Prayers, sage, crystals, meditation. We got this. We got this, family. We truly do. As we get to Friday's GH, TJ is concerned.
Probably some stuff about Christina and the baby. That's the only thing it could be. That's all they got. That's all they got TJ focused on right now is the baby.
And not his cousin, who needs his support during this time of bereavement. Choices, GH. Choices. Mm-hmm. And with that, this wraps up the Spin of Speculations for the week ahead. Happy to see Trina. I pray for today, and I really would throw a Hail Mary, a five for Wednesday, because I can only imagine what we're going to get with those scenes with Joss. But now it is time for our song picks of the week, the songs that best describe our favorite ship. And it continues to be a very sad time, and I got some doozies today, but Jasmine, you go first.
I got some doozies today, too. I got three songs, and two of them center on Trina making a statement about not being able to breathe without Spencer. So the first one is No Air, Jordan Sparks and Chris Brown. Key lyrics are, tell me how I'm supposed to breathe with no air. If I should die before I wake, it's because you took my breath away. Losing you is like living in a world with no air. I'm here alone, didn't want to leave. My heart won't move, it's incomplete. Wish there was a way that I can make you understand. But how do you expect me to live alone with just me? Because my world revolves around you, it's so hard for me to breathe. Tell me how I'm supposed to breathe with no air. Can't live, can't breathe with no air. It's how I feel whenever you ain't there. It's no air, no air. Got me out here in the water so deep. Tell me how you gonna be without me. If you ain't here, I just can't breathe. It's no air, no air. And the second song is I Can't Breathe by, by B. Miller. Okay, and the key lyrics are, somebody get me a hammer. Want to break all the clocks and the mirrors and go back to a time that was different. A time when I didn't feel like there was something missing. Now my body and mind are so distant. Don't know how to escape from this prison. How can I free my mind? Because I can't breathe. 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 How can I live in the moment when my thoughts never feel like my own and don't know how to admit that I'm broken? How can I be all right? Because I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And then the last song is Bad Dream by Vancouver Sleep Clinic. And the key lyrics are, you made me feel like it's a bad dream, just a world that I imagined. The truth wouldn't sink in, but my chest started sinking, and I wished it was a bad dream. I'd wake up like nothing happened and everything would be all right. You were a beautiful distraction, gave reality my absence, consumed all my hours, filled my lungs up with flowers. You left so many that I can't breathe. I feel heavy. I felt empty. But everything will be all right. You will hear me say goodbye, my love. You will hear me say goodbye, my love. It's like I'm living in a bad dream. Close my eyelids, but I can't sleep. And times that I savored became time that was wasted. I wish I could go backwards before love was just nostalgic and everything would be all right. And those are my song picks for this week.
Very heavy. Very true. Very relevant for Serena during this time. And now I must deliver a gut punch because on Monday's GH, when Trina said that she wanted to die in Spencer's place, this song immediately came to me. I love Evanescence. And for those of you that love this band like I do, if you think My Immortal is the darkest song they ever wrote? No, actually it's not. And this song is actually from a real place of pain for Amy Lee because she lost her sister at a very young age. And it's a very heavy song, but I thought it was very relevant for Trina right now as she continues to grieve Spencer's passing. And it's entitled Like You from the Open Door. Key lyrics include, stay low. Soft, dark, and dreamless. Far beneath my nightmares and loneliness. I hate me for breathing without you. I don't want to feel any more for you. Grieving for you, I'm not grieving for you. Nothing real love can't undo. And though I may have lost my way, all paths lead straight to you. I long to be like you, like cold in the ground like you. Halo. Blinding wall between us, melt away and leave us alone again. Humming, haunted somewhere out there. I believe our love can see us through in death. I long to be like you, like cold in the ground like you. There's room inside for two, and I'm not grieving for you. I'm coming for you. You're not alone. No matter what they told you, you're not alone. I'll be right beside you forevermore. I long to be like you, sis, like cold in the ground like you did. There's room inside for two, and I'm not grieving for you. And as we lay in silent bliss, I know you remember me. I long to be like you, like cold in the ground like you. There's room inside for two, and I'm not grieving for you. I'm coming for you. Very heavy song.
Mm-hmm.
Very heavy. Another song that is a little heavy but more hopeful is Hold On by Sarah McLachlan from the Fumbling Towards Ecstasy album, which I love. It is a classic, people. A 90s classic. Cop the album. It's brilliant. But this song also fits perfectly for Sabrina and Trina during her time of bereavement. Key lyrics include, hold on. Hold on to yourself, for this is gonna hurt like hell. Hold on. Hold on to yourself. You know the only time will tell. What is it in me that refuses to believe this isn't easier than the real thing? My love, you know that you're my best friend. You know that I'd do anything for you. And my love, let nothing come between us. My love for you is strong and true. Am I in heaven here, or am I at the crossroads I am standing? So now you're sleeping peaceful. I lie awake and pray that you will be strong tomorrow and we'll see another day. And we will praise it and love the light that brings a smile across your face. Oh God, if you're out there, won't you hear me? I know we never talked before. And oh God, the man I love is leaving. Won't you take him when he comes to your door? Am I in heaven here, or am I in hell? At the crossroads, I am standing. So now you're sleeping peaceful. I lie awake and pray that you'll be strong tomorrow and we'll see another day and we will praise it. And the love, the light that brings a smile. So now you're sleeping peaceful. I lie awake and pray that you'll be strong tomorrow and we will see another day and we will praise it. And love the light that brings a smile across your face. Hold on to yourself, for this is going to hurt like hell. And my final song is a sneaky song because of Uncle Cy Cy, Father Cy Cy, having the audacity to begin a radio station, or shall I say, have a radio program in Port Charles. And this song is bluesy. It's not as heavy and depressing. It's very Father Cy Cy. It is a song that I love from Songs for the Deaf for Queens of the Stone Age by the late, great Mark Lanegan on lead vocals. It is entitled For Cy Cy, God is in the Radio.
Oh my gosh.
It's a great song. It's so bluesy. I just love it. And the lyrics and Mark's voice is just bluesy, gritty. It's just everything. And this fits Cyrus perfectly. I had to do it. It's perfect. Great inside joke. Key lyrics include, I thought I saw him on the video. A trance is keeping him under. I know that God is in the radio. Check in the station. The narcotic from me to you, just caught in the medium. I know you hear it. I hear it too. It's everywhere that I go. You come back another day and do no wrong. You come back another day and do no wrong. They say the devil is paranoid, always trying to cover. But God is leaking through the stereo between the station to station. You believe it. I know you do. You won't admit it or say so. I know that God is in the radio, just repeating the slogan. You come back another day and do no wrong. You come back another day and do no wrong. And the lyrics repeat, great breakdown towards the end. But this is for you, Father Cy Cy, you copycat bastard, you. And with that, this wraps the song picks of the week. Heavy as hell, but a little fun at the end to get you through week 3 of bereavement as we mourn the loss of Spencer as he still finds his way back home. Trust and believe that as we put a bow on this week's Sabrina Sessions right here in WST. I want to thank Jasmine, as always, for joining me as we recap the week that was for Trina's grief on GH.
Yes, yes. I still can't believe that. That still is weird to me to say 3 weeks. Because I'm like, we're counting. And I'm going to say right now, Spencer is out of the water. And he is at that French nunnery like you predicted. And he's on the mend, fighting to find his way back to the love of his life. That's where Spencer is right now.
This is diversity's concept of the French nunnery. And I'm going to keep that alive on this show until we see Spencer at said French nunnery getting tended to by Sister Mary Clarence and Mary and them as they bring him back to health, as they try to resist temptation every step of the way. Because God is a good God, if you know what I mean. Blessed be, because hello. They say, is that Michelangelo for real? Because my God, look at the body on him. Abs for days. Woo!
Oh, no.
I will make light of this, okay? Our bereavement will feature some lust, okay?
Yeah, it's got to.
We need some levity, damn it. We cannot be depressed every week. So in our minds, he's getting rehabilitated at the French nunnery, and he's getting tended to, and he's getting rubbed down with some holy water. Okay?
As long as he doesn't come back to poor Charles like Angelus, I'm good. Like, don't come back on some BS tripping on Trina. Do you hear me?
Listen, if he comes back on some Angelus shit, we got some problems. You hear me? Don't you be trying to do some shit like leave a... I don't even want to say what I want to say right now, because Angelus is some bullshit, okay? Don't leave no dead fishes on the front porch somewhere. Protect your animals, y'all, because just Lord Jesus, pray on it, pray.
And I'd like to think, too, that the fact that Ace still has his NYC chew toy is another premonition that, you know, another foreshadowing, rather, that Spencer is going to be back, because you saw it sitting on the table, didn't you? That NYC heart was sitting right there. That NYC apple was sitting right on the table.
Yes, I thought of you. I said, look, there is Jasmine's favorite chew toy. Spencer's memory is still alive somehow, some way. But yeah, we hope he's not going to come back that different, my God. But to quote Buffy as well for Trina, the hardest part being in the world is living in it.
Uh-huh.
That is true. But you're going to find a way to live, girl, somehow, some way. And by the way, the hairography was herring on Monday, girl.
Mm-hmm.
Love the hair. Love that little wave. It did what it needed to do. Perfection. Loved it. We got to find the bright spots in our moment of pain, people. That's what we got to do here. Yes. But that's it for the sessions. Love the extra time here with you guys today. But we'll be back next Monday recapping the week that was for Trina on GH. Let's pray for Wednesday. And we're going to chop it up the best way we can right here on the Sabrina Sessions. May you join us. Enjoy the week ahead if you're watching. And with that, in the words of the great Trina Carisha, Buffy Robinson, for myself and for Jasmine, goodbye, room. Thank you.
Goodbye, room. Thank you.